The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. From the heart of Broadway in historic downtown Cape Girardeau, this is Pro Wrestling Unscripted.
It is Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020. And you are tuned into Pro Wrestling Unscripted here on the Podzilla 1985 Network. I want to thank you guys once again for joining us, as I do every week. My name is Shannon Young. I am the Phoenix, allegedly, and I will be your host tonight. Along with me, of course, my good friends. First off, we have the five-star man, Ace of Gray.
All five.
We got Double H.
Hey, hey.
And the big D, Dalton Anthony.
Yo.
So last night, we did our new PZ85 plays, and at the beginning of the show, we mentioned that we would be taking part of the National Blackout Day yesterday, and we didn't post the episode until after midnight. We also said that we would not be discussing that particular topic on that show because, Hunter, as you said, that wasn't really the show to do it.
Right.
Tonight, similar in a way, but different in a way. Tonight, we're not going to spend the entire show talking about what's happening in the world right now because this is a professional wrestling show. We are here to talk about professional wrestling. We will be talking about it tomorrow on Thursday, which is a lot more open. We can pretty much say whatever we want. We can really get in depth on our thoughts about this, and we will do that. But Asa, tonight, we did want to talk about it a little bit, and you had a fantastic idea. I would love for you to tell the audience what you were thinking.
Yeah, so essentially, like I said, right before we started recording, everything happening this week, and just, like, I couldn't just do an episode of PW, because you look at so many other outlets, like, you know, PlayStation moved their gameplay reveal thing that was supposed to be Thursday, Cyberpunk pushed back their date, like, all this kind of stuff, and it just kind of felt wrong to just kind of carry on business as usual. So what I want to do is just, as a group, talk about the people of color and black people within professional wrestling, either, you know, people that we looked up to as we were growing up, or, you know, favorite characters, things like that, or now that we've all had a chance to, you know, actually, you know, work within the industry, you know, talk about people that we know who deserve more of a spotlight.
Well, I can say, talking about, you know, us working in the industry and people that we love, I think we would all agree that there are so many fantastic African-American wrestlers in Cape Championship Wrestling, in Arkansas and, you know, Tennessee, just a lot of great people that we've met along the way who are super talented, incredibly nice people. I immediately think of, you know, the LA Hustlers. I think of the Wise Church, Cassandra Golden. Seisheen. I mean, there's just a laundry list of incredible black talent that we have worked with in CCW. And personally, growing up in professional wrestling, watching professional wrestling, you know, I'm an 80s kid. So I grew up, one of my, and I know that this may be a silly answer because I know it's often debated how deserving of like a Hall of Fame spot he had and stuff like that. But Coco Beware is one of my absolute favorite wrestlers of all time. And as a kid, I don't think there was anyone that excited me more than Coco Beware. I loved him. I love Frankie. I actually got to meet Coco backstage at the very first American Hostile event. He was incredibly nice. That was kind of a dream come true. You can't talk about professional wrestling without talking about the influence and contributions that African Americans have made over the years. And that's my tangent.
Yeah, I'll jump in.
Thank you so
you
much.
You know, I grew up not entirely on professional wrestling. I talked about this a while back. It was like 97, 98 before I really started watching. So I was almost a high school at that point. But my buddy Jake, who I've mentioned before on the show, we were actually doing homework over the phone one night in middle school. And he's like, hey, put it on USA. I'm like, what are you talking about? He was just put it on USA. So I flip it over and it was Raw. That was on, and it was a match that where The Rock was facing Kane, and immediately I went, oh man, I don't know, I'm not, you know, I watched this a little bit when I was a kid, but he's like, just leave it on for a little bit, and I ended up about 5 minutes later going, I gotta go, and sitting back and watching the rest of the show, but I only wanted to see what The Rock was up to. The Rock is, was, and probably forever will be my favorite professional wrestler, and I remember even as a kid getting pushback on that, because of course all my friends liked Stone Cold. How can you like The Rock? How can you, you know, pick him over Austin? I'm like, I just do, man. I just think he's cool.
Easily.
He's the coolest guy. Yeah, 100%. And some of that pushback, and I obviously I won't name names or anything, but it came in the form of you know, what was effectively casual racism. And not to, you know, diminish it at all, but The Rock is, of course, half black. It didn't matter to them, you know, that just, he's not like us, so how do you like him? And that was just, I remember that being so frustrating to me at the time. And now, and I, too, looking back on it, it's just, it baffles me that that
I can see that
okay.
That would be especially frustrating when their counter argument is Stone Cold Steve Austin, which,
right.
Like, if I remember correctly, used to chase like black people around the ring on an ATV.
Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, he's like the most. If and I know, and this is not an this is not against Stone Cold at all, because I don't think Stone Cold is racist. I don't know Stone Cold personally, but I would hope he's not. But whenever I think of a wrestler, especially character wise, that could be a racist, Stone Cold is immediately the first one that pops in my head, just because of the I mean, just look at him
from a character standpoint.
Really?
I know
from a character standpoint.
You ain't gonna say Jesse and Festus?
No, because nobody remembers Jesse. And Festus.
All I remember is biscuits and gravy.
Biscuits
that's
and gravy.
Stop it.
But real quick before I step aside for someone else, when the invasion angle came around and when WCW got folded into WWE. I remember how disappointed everyone was to pretty quickly find out, you know, hey, you're not getting Hall and Nash, you're not getting Hogan, you're not getting Ric Flair. But I was so excited because I was like, yeah, but we're getting Booker T. How are you not happy to get Booker T?
And WCW Booker T was my favorite Booker T.
Oh, man. And especially when they first brought him over, like before he was kind of made into the goof, when they pretty well put him on the level of The Rock and he was their version of The Rock coming in, there was a little too much, like, look how much he is like The Rock. But I sort of loved that little mini feud that they had when he first came over. And I was perfectly fine with Booker T being the guy to lead the charge. Don't get me wrong. I liked King Booker, too, on a very different sort of way, very different kind of level. But Booker T, to some degree, has always been there among my upper echelon. I'm doing that 10 wrestlers thing, Shannon, because you tagged me in it and then proceeded to leave Facebook. Thanks for that.
Yes.
I don't know that Booker will make it into my top 10, but top 20 easily. I mean, top probably 15.
So before I hand it over to Dalton and Asa to talk about the influences they their respect and stuff like that, mentioning Booker T, I feel like you almost have to mention, as proud as I am of the contributions of the African-American community to professional wrestling hasn't always been kind to them. And I think of Booker T especially as an example. We all remember the Triple H promo where he said, people like you don't win titles. I mean, the WWE especially is just a laundry list of offenses against black people.
No, but Shannon, it's okay. They put white text on a black background. And Titus O'Neil is doing speeches.
They are.
I thought you were going to go, yeah, but it's okay. He won. Oh, no, he didn't. He didn't.
No, yeah, that's the thing. That's what Shannon's talking about, is they did a Triple H's racist storyline and then let the racist win.
Yeah.
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 In the worst way possible. And then also I'm thinking back to, and Dalton, I forget his name. Help me out. He was the indie wrestler that got signed up and they made the T-shirt for him, which was basically
ACH.
Red lips. Yeah.
ACH.
Red lips and the big smile, and how tone deaf that was. Even if they didn't mean it to be racist, how tone deaf that was. And if tone deaf was the worst thing that WWE and WWF at the time had been, that's one thing, but it was downright insulting. I remember when I was growing up, if it was a black wrestler, they had to have like hip hop or rap music. They always had the same kind of style and gimmick. It was always offensive or insulting. And I didn't watch a lot of WCW growing up until the Monday Night Wars hit. But, you know, years later, I went back and watched the moment that Ron Simmons beat Vader for the title. And what a proud thing they did over there. Whereas in WWE, you know, we got The Godfather. We've got all of these terribly offensive. Was it Saba Simba? Was that his name?
Yep. Whenever Tony Atlas came back.
Just incredibly racist and offensive. And I just don't get it. But
by the
anyway,
way,
that's
quickly before you move entirely out of that, because I do want to at least for a second talk about you know, the local level and the indie level. You, I don't know how you managed to leave Hollis Drew off that list.
You son of a bitch.
Well, hold on.
Well,
I was giving it to someone else so they could continue the list, because of course,
okay.
Hollis Drew, Baracus.
I will be glad to, because Hollis was one of the last guys I worked with before I left, and also one of the first guys I worked with when we got that whole thing up and running. And you talk about, you know, a guy who does not lean into the stereotype of the gimmick. Hollis comes out with these. He's got his cigar. He's got his vest. The music is incredible, and he's just the nicest guy. Like,
oh my God,
talking
yeah.
and hanging out with him backstage is just, it's totally different. And then it's like, all right, you ready to do this? And we go out, and the switch just flips, and you can tell.
Weird as hell, but
I'm really looking forward to seeing that guy again.
He also is someone who, because he was someone I was going to for sure mention. He's also someone who you can tell only wants to get better. The amount, like, I see him asking people questions. I see him talking with people. He's pulled me aside, and we had, like, there was a show in, it was the most recent show in Charleston, and we had like a 30-minute conversation about character. Of just like he was kind of, you know, he had these ideas he had in the back of his head he was wanting to talk about, and just like, and,
well, he's so good at it.
And the cool thing was, he was, you know, we welcomed him in. He was an official member of Podzilla 1985.
I remember
which
that.
Which then we revoked that when he joined the Pinnacle and betrayed Brandon Barbwire. But now looking at where everything left off with CCW, am I out of PZ85?
Yeah.
Dad. Okay. Yeah.
It's pretty much just me and Dalton at this point.
It was a long time coming.
So I remember that because Hollis, we're all in line. It was to meet James Ellsworth, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we're all in line, and Hollis, and we didn't know Hollis back then.
No, because it was a show in, it was, oh, never mind. You said, I heard James Storm. That's my fault.
No. Nobody wanted to meet James.
If it was Ellsworth,
please continue. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to meet James Storm. Yeah. But yeah, so we went there, and Hollis just like jumped in the line with us, and we didn't know Hollis really. We'd just seen him wrestling, and he was just super cool. And we're like, "Hey, you're a member of the show tonight," and we all took a picture with James Ellsworth with him. It was really cool. I also want to mention, because if he's probably listening, because somehow he always does whenever we don't mention him, and then he gets really pissy about it. Damone Sollavino.
I was gonna get there.
Yeah, one of my favorite guys in professional wrestling, who I do have a pinfall victory over, and he's
really good. Listening.
Also weird as hell, weirdest wrestler I've ever met, but super nice and just incredibly talented. Dalton, hit me up with some inspiration.
Yeah, no, kind of to hit upon like Hollis and Damone and all them. Like, I get excited anytime I get to work with any of those guys. I've wrestled the Hustlers at least 10 times. Bradley saved my life in Arkansas one night. So he's my forever favorite for that reason. But like, yeah, I love Hollis to death. There's so many good ones. Like, even in Stride, like people that of color that I've worked with that are just so amazing. Like, Chris Hargis is probably one of the better wrestlers I've ever been in the ring with, just on a pure wrestling stance. And I have fucked up so royally in matches with him. And he's just pulled me aside and like has been the coolest person to me. Savion Ayers out of Stride's also amazing. Some people we left off at CCW, Calvin Aldridge, Q. I love him to death.
Yeah.
Super, like, just some super awesome people that I personally got to work with, just from personal experiences, are amazing. In the grand scheme of like wrestling, as like the bigger, Kofi Kingston is my like number one. Because I remember I was watching ECW. I remember seeing the vignettes. Of course, a white kid out of Perryville, Missouri. We have this guy from Jamaica, quote unquote, and is doing like some of the coolest offense that I've ever seen. I fell in love with him instantly. Crime Time, even though that was a very problematic gimmick, I still loved them because they had just so much like charisma. And then they could go in the ring as well.
People wanted to hate them when they were debuted because of their characters, but they won people over.
Yeah.
Like, very quickly.
100%. And it's so, like, Farouk is just his entire career, even now, like, is still super noticeable and is gone from one of the scariest individuals in wrestling to one of the funniest. Same thing with Godfather. Like, he was Papa Shango into Godfather, well, Kami Mustafa into Godfather into the Goodfather. Like, he was super dynamic that I absolutely loved. I'm not going to say the one for Asa because I would feel like a jerk, but like, there's so many amazing wrestlers that I feel like WWE slept on. There could have, like, there's no reason that we went from The Rock to Kofi Kingston with no real, like, main title push. Like,
well,
yeah,
Shelton
we had
Benjamin was, he was so close.
He was.
He was so close.
And, like, yeah, we did have Booker T with the World Heavyweight title, but that was on SmackDown. It was kind of the B thing. They never really treated it with the respect that it probably needed to have. But it does feel like we honestly went from The Rock to Kofi Kingston, which was, I mean, if you do it to, I mean, 7 years' time, I think 2003 was whenever The Rock won it, or 2013, sorry, to 6 years. But it's one of those where it's like, those are really our only two big ones. With, like, the actual titles. There's so many people in between that should have had that belt that just didn't.
I know that he didn't win the WWE title. Or if he did, I can't remember, because there's a huge chunk of time where I just blank out on wrestling. But Mark Henry.
World Heavyweight.
World Heavyweight.
Yep. He was also an ECW champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hall of Pain is one of my absolute favorite gimmicks of all time. And I always thought he was incredibly talented. And, I mean, my God, he's been in there for, I think, 30 years at this point. And can still, I mean, that salmon suit alone.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the most memorable heel turns ever.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Asa, I know Dalton took Kofi Kingston and said that he wasn't going to take anything from you, but I know you also had... I remember when Kofi won, everyone was excited, but no one was more excited than Asa. Asa literally danced a jig, and for Dalton to just say that Kofi Kingston name out there is just... But Asa, please.
Well, and that's kind of part of why I wanted to do this, because it is, you know, it's part of the problem that there are, how many huge moments like that can we talk about in pro wrestling?
And the fact that it is a huge moment when an African-American person does something significant or is giving something significant, we praise it like it's the best thing ever, but it should just be commonplace.
Yeah. But no, yeah, Kofi's huge. Growing up, I always liked D'Lo Brown was one of my favorites, which I missed. I missed pretty much all of Nation of Domination until like I got older and started to like rewatch stuff, and was trying to like figure out. I remember going through older WWF magazines and like putting pieces together of what pay per view shows were, without having seen like the TV to accompany them. But D'Lo was always one of my favorites, like his entrance alone. You're messing with the real deal now. And the head bob, which I'm pretty sure would snap my neck if I even attempted it. Also, the Sky High is just an awesome finisher.
The chest protector. Don't forget the chest protector.
Before Roman Reigns. Well, before the Shield. I also really like Booker T through WCW. But to me, it's unquestionably all hail King Booker. Because it worked. Because I hated him. I hated him. I hated Charmel. Like, I desperately wanted to see him lose. So, you know, he was effective. And then as I got older again, I could, like, oh, no, he's amazing. He's fantastic. The New Day, I think, is, of course, the greatest stable or, you know, at least tag team of all time. Like, they're my favorite. I genuinely think they've reinvented themselves so many times. They've had amazing matches with pretty much anyone that's put up there against them. On top of the fact that like they had a mission statement and they stayed true to it. Their goal was always get the world title on Kofi Kingston, and they did. Plus, you know, you have up, up, down, down with Xavier Woods branching out outside of wrestling into video games, which are pretty much the two things in the world I care about the most. So that's a perfect little melody for me. He's actually going to be on Kind of Funny Games Daily tomorrow on Thursday, I think, because they're doing an all black cast week.
Man, he's got to get back into the ring sometime soon. I know that he's, you know, rehabbing that injury and with everything that's going on, but I was just recently reminded of some of the stuff they did with the Wyatt family when he was the one who was kind of mesmerized by Bray, and he kept having to go between am I gonna go with them or what's happening. His character work is unparalleled in so many ways, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for it.
Yeah.
No,
he's an incredible actor. Awesome. Yeah. And I want to throw a random name out at you, because it popped in my head, and I don't even know if you guys are going to remember this guy, but when I was growing up, I very much became a huge WCW fan, And one of my absolute favorite tag teams in WCW was Scott Norton and the Ice Train. Do you guys remember Ice Train?
Yeah.
I watched genuinely WCW. Thought you were going to say Harlem Heat.
Do not.
Yeah. I did too for a second. I was like, he's going to say some shit like Junkyard Dog. And then you said WCW. I was like, he's going to say Harlem Heat. I literally had that exact same thought.
So I just want to point out that I don't always have to be a condescending dick. Sometimes I can actually be professional and respectful of the topic at hand. This is one of those topics that I don't want to come across as just like a jokester, because this is very
important. No, I didn't think you were going to say it as a joke.
Well, no, Dalton did. I just wanted to put him down.
Oh, no, I totally did.
But yeah, Ice Train, I'm going to send you guys a picture here in the group chat real quick, because this dude, not only did I love the name Ice Train, but the man was just a monster. I mean, he is a beastly body. I mean, he was I absolutely loved Ice Train, and I never knew what happened to him, because once him and Norton fell off as a tag team and Norton joined the NWO, I guess I just kind of, they pushed him down and never really heard from him again. But
he changed his identity to Big E and then hid out until the future, because good Lord, he looks a lot like, the singlet muscles, is just... Yeah.
Those muscles are on fleek, is what I hear. That dude is impressive looking. And you're putting him up against Scott Norton. Scott Norton also had a very impressive body, but not compared to Ice Train. Ice Train was a beast, and I think they could have done so much more with him, but whatever.
It also reminds me of, like, because I was weirdly fascinated by Ahmed Johnson.
Oh, my God.
Who is someone I don't think I ever actually saw wrestle. He was just in the two wrestling games that I had.
Warzone
on the Game Boy. And I didn't understand what his finisher was. Like, I would see it.
Yeah.
Like, it was like Pearl River Plunge. It's like, okay, but what is it? Because, like, the Game Boy version of that game was garbage.
Right.
And just, like, so the animations were so, and I was like, what is he even doing? Also, Farouk had the Dominator.
Yes.
Which I always thought was awesome. My first introduction to Farouk was the Acolytes, and then into the far superior APA.
So I didn't know about, because I didn't know a lot about old WCW. So
I didn't either.
Monday Night Wars was really my introduction to WCW. And then my first time seeing Farouk was when he first came to WWE, and he was with Sonny, and he had like the stupid gladiator outfit, and I thought he was cool, but like he didn't impress me. And then the Nation of Domination stuff I thought was amazing. And like I said, I went back and rewatched the old WCW stuff, and I saw how important he was to history. And very, very, very cool. It also just reminds me of when the Nation of Domination, Los Boricuas, and the Disciples of Apocalypse basically had a gang war, talking about offensive stuff. Like, Jesus Christ, I can't believe how much the WWE gets away with, and then has the balls to talk about how inclusive and how much they respect like African American culture and the history of professional wrestling. It would be funny if it weren't so, I don't know the word. I'm upset now.
Terribly ironic.
Can we just briefly double back to when Bobby Lashley started doing the Dominator and kind of borrowed it from Farouk? Oh, I was happy. I was so happy. I don't think he does it much anymore, but it's such a good move.
It's so cool, but it also looks terrifying.
Yes.
Like, I don't understand. It's every time I see the Vertebreaker.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Like, how in the world, why would a company allow that move to happen? And why would a wrestler be like, okay, yeah, my finish is a vertebraker. Yeah, cool. So bye.
You're hitting
Don't
me with a roll-up.
my exact
sentence would be, so you're beating me via roll-up tonight.
Yeah. It's the most dangerous move in professional wrestling, so you know why wouldn't you use the roll-up?
And then he looks at you and goes, you want to kick out of the vertebraker?
Yeah. Ahmed Johnson. But also, like, there's so much talent now as well. On Impact, Willie Mack is the X Division champion. He's been so good for a very long time. It's nice to see him on like a major platform, being able to perform. They also just signed Chris Bay, who is a younger guy but has a lot of potential.
He's going to be in Retromania.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
he's DLC. He's going to be the first batch of DLC.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
nifty.
Have we not mentioned Keith Lee yet?
That was getting to it.
Guys, I'm looking at my action figure shelf right now, and I have names. Like, I'm just sitting here being like, all right, cool.
If you're talking about current wrestlers, I want to mention, just want to throw out Naomi. Absolutely in love with Naomi and everything
Sarah,
she does.
Sarah would be very upset with me if she did not mention her. That might be her favorite female wrestler of all time.
Oh, she just exudes cool, and she's so talented. I absolutely adore Naomi.
One of my
everything about her presentation is just so good.
Yeah, one of my favorite African-American women just had her first action figure come out, and it's amazing. And Asa can, like, agree to how much I love her. Bianca Belair, who is just an athletic freak. I think the second I watched, the first time I watched her on NXT, I was like, well, I fell in love with this person. Because
she is the EST, isn't she?
Yeah. And the first time she hit somebody with her hair, I don't think I popped that hard for one single spot in a match in a very long time.
Oh, my God.
I liked it the first time. And then when I realized, oh, this is her shtick, I was kind of like, okay, so she's got her hair. It wasn't until like I saw more and more of her that I realized, oh, no, she's also just a phenomenal athlete. And have you seen the pictures she puts on Twitter of like all of these wacky outfits that Montez Ford wears like during these segments with the Viking Raiders? She's just making them for him.
I think we were doing everybody a disservice if we don't mention someone who I think is legitimately probably top 10 most underrated performers of all time, and that is R-Truth.
Oh, yeah.
Everything he touches is gold, from his run in TNA, his early stuff in WWE and WWF, and quite possibly one of my favorite moments of all time, and it probably is offensive too, but when he came out dressed
the
as
Confederate
like
a Confederate
soldier, like the balls. I mean, my God,
did
R-Truth
you just,
is so good.
Did you just say, wait, it might be considered offensive, and then finished that sentence?
Well, no, because it was because you also have to, you need the other
the context.
Half of that.
Yeah, yeah, you need the context of it.
Because he did it in like South Carolina.
He did it to
Virginia
mock.
Or somewhere. Yeah. he did it in a, you know, the South, one of the South will rise again states. Yeah.
But it's also one of those things that I'm pretty sure it wasn't his idea. So when you've got like a white guy writing for a black guy to dress like that in a southern city, it becomes, okay, is it still funny or is it funny for the right reasons? Yeah. And then I of course, you remember when Vince McMahon greeted John Cena backstage.
Yeah, no, we're good.
Oh, man.
It's insulting. I cannot believe that they get away with that much. And, like, the more we talk about WWE, we've said it before, there is a laundry list of reasons to absolutely hate the WWE. Just pick one.
I have to mention that part of the reason that I was thinking of Keith Lee is we started talking about other companies, and for a minute I couldn't think of his name. I kept thinking of Marcus Carvon, but Monty Brown popped into my head, and I couldn't get the pounce out of it. And then all I can see is Keith Lee just absolutely sending Adam Cole into the stratosphere over the railing.
He turned him into a different channel.
To be fair, and then him popping up from the apron behind Finn Balor and just the slow ride. Oh, it's the best.
I really liked Monty Brown / Marcus Corvin too. Yes. I always thought he was super talented. Alpha Male was one of my favorites.
It was
so sad when he left the business.
It was really cool being there at Survivor Series weekend last year in Chicago, because we did TakeOver and Survivor Series, and that was kind of Keith Lee's coming out party to like mainstream WWE. Where like we knew he was a thing, but they like really put him on a pedestal that entire weekend. Mm. And he's just like, that'll be a WWE champion. Hopefully. Sooner. Yeah. And like, Ace, I'm sorry if this is what you're going into, but we're also missing, like, there's still a bunch of people like Cedric Alexander, Ricochet,
Rich Swann,
Isaiah Scott. Yeah, there's so many. Yeah.
And this isn't just, we're not trying to name every black wrestler. Right. Like, this is just the ones, like, you know, we want to spotlight just how much talent is out there and how easy it is to kind of overlook people. Because, yeah, you know, Keith Lee is the current North American champion. But also, because, you know, anyone who watches WWE knows these names, essentially. But someone, I don't remember who it was, but someone said it earlier, because we talked about Haas, but Calvin Aldridge, he is someone that kind of, it's refreshing to see, like, because he's another one of the KC guys, and that entire KC crew has always been just so cool to us, pretty much from day one. But to see him take such a strong stand on using, you know, his social media platforms to get, you know, these really important messages across, like, I'm super proud of him. I'm super impressed with him. And then there's also guys on the independent scene, you know, that aren't, there's so many names on the independent scene that you can't even go through J. Rose. AJ Gray is one who has been very, very vocal about everything. He was the one, if you guys remember, was supposed to have the For the Culture show.
Yeah.
Mania weekend through GCW, which, you know, Crime Time was going to be a part of that. Like, so many names. And for him to, because he's for such a long time has tried to champion the fact that, you know, these black voices, these black performers deserve to be held in equal regard to their white counterparts. And for whatever reason, you know, we've met plenty of people so far in the wrestling business that you can kind of, or, you know, and we've heard stories mostly. I shouldn't say we've met, because it's mostly through stories that we've heard of just like, yeah, you know, certain promotions being shady and bigoted and not wanting to book a certain number of people and just, you know, ridiculous nonsense like that. So he is someone who is really, really taking a stand and again, is using his platform at the, you know, potential risk of losing future business. You know, he sees that it's more important than that.
And that's something I truly respect. When someone says, you know, this is more important than money or, you know, your fame or stuff like that, because that's, I don't think people really appreciate how much damage you can do to your career if you say something controversial. There are times in our past where we have, pretty much all of us here, have been told, especially on Podzilla, to not speak about, or on Facebook too, I've heard other wrestlers being told, if you want a job in this business, if you want to get booked, don't speak up about these subjects that are touchy, because it can cost you bookings, it can cost you money, you might not get your big break because of it. So for someone to say, screw that, this is more important than that, that is such a honorable thing, that much respect.
And then in the same regard, one last name that I want to throw out there, Timmy Lou Retton, or he's at Timmy Lou Who on Twitter. He's one half of the Gym Nasty Boys.
Mm-hmm.
White Mike and Timmy Lou Retton. He's another person who is just constantly speaking up and speaking out about inequality, injustice, and it's on the one hand, like, you know, it's hard to see when we know that, like, there's really, you know, it's like, oh, well crap, what can we do? You know, we're in a very fortunate position in so many ways, but including the fact that, like, the company that we primarily work for does give so many great opportunities to black people. You know, Hollis Giroux was one of the longer reigning champions that we had. And
Hustlers,
one of
obviously.
The first too. He was the second one, was he not?
Yeah, he was the second ever champion. But yeah, so it's great to see that, and that's something that I would love to see continue with, you know, to get even more. But it's just, I don't know, and that's kind of why I wanted to kind of do this, is because it's so easy that when you talk about your list of greats, you have to recognize the fact that up until pretty recently, it has not been an even playing field.
No.
And you know, you can only really have the conversation of look at these black athletes, look at these black performers, and look at them on, you know, these stages, on in front of these audiences, because Farouk was the first ever black world champion, and that was shockingly recent. Like in the grand scheme of things,
in all too many ways, treated as an afterthought too. I mean, you almost, there are not enough people who know that. That's the thing. That feels like such an obscure thing. We should know that. That shouldn't be so difficult to put out there.
And I guess I should say Ron Simmons, not Farouk, because he was Ron Simmons at the time. As, you know, when he won.
And I think he goes by Ron Simmons now, doesn't he? Even in WWE.
Yeah, he's switched back. It's just because APA, like, it's how long, like, look how long it took me to forget Drew McIntyre to switch to, and then I had to switch back.
And I got to meet Ron Simmons at the first. It was the first Super Show is when he appeared, right, Dalton?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was Jason or Big Lee or who. Probably Jason, I would say. But if it's Big Lee, I send a shout out to Big Lee. But or Ken, whoever. They put Ron Simmons' table directly across from my table at Comic-Con. So I got to hang out with Ron Simmons and talk to him quite a bit. And just one of the nicest, coolest guys. So respectful. Love Ron Simmons. I hope he comes back someday. Probably not going to happen. But I hope he comes back someday. And that's my tangent.
So I wanted to look just to be certain, because when I say, you know, shockingly recently, I forgot just how recent He won the world championship in 1992.
Yeah.
So we were all alive when we had the first black pro wrestling world champion.
I don't think I was yet.
Okay, listen here, child.
Yeah, I think, well, like, we're talking months. Like, I was almost,
We're you were conceived.
All of us, we were alive at that time. Dalton, I'm baby.
And I guess, I mean, maybe that's incorrect, because that's WCW, like, looking at Wikipedia, that says WCW champion, so it's not like there could have been a 1970s WCW world champion.
Yeah, but I think that is widely regarded as the first African-American world champion was when Ron Simmons won the title.
Before that, really, the big celebration goes to, it was The Rock's father, to Rocky Johnson, for the tag team titles.
Yeah, with Tony Atlas. But there's a really good... I honestly think he's the first one, because wrestling was not super favorable to people of color before that.
Still isn't, don't worry.
There's a really good... I forget what it's called, but it's on the network. It's in like the vault, but it's like Legends of Wrestling or something like that. And there is an entire episode. It's a round table. It's basically before a podcast were podcasts, but like there's a round table of people talking about diversity in wrestling and how it used to be. And I think like Teddy Long's on it. I can't remember everybody. I've seen it before, but it's been just, you haven't seen something in 6 years, stuff starts slipping your mind. But it's a really, really good, like, if you want something to kind of, as a good retrospective on it, that one's a pretty solid one.
Dalton, before we leave this, are you sure you don't want to mention New Jack?
Oh, fuck. He's one of my favorite characters in wrestling. And I don't mean, like, in-ring character. I mean as a human being.
What did he say when he said he couldn't feel his legs?
He wasn't going to need them.
Oh.
So,
anyway,
I'm looking... Real quick, to rein it back for just a second.
My favorite.
I'm on Last Word on ProWrestling.com, and with their headline is Kofi Kingston becomes 28th Black World Champion in wrestling history. The first one that they are acknowledging is Bearcat Wright, who wrestled for the WWA out of Los Angeles, and he won the World Heavyweight Championship there in 1963.
Okay, so World they're going wrestling all the way Association, back to territories.
Yeah, we're doing deep territory, too.
It was a breakaway territory from the NWA, and then eventually was reabsorbed back into the NWA in 1968, 5 years later, and that was what became NWA Hollywood.
Okay. Can you give us the next one after that?
I'll give you, like, the next five. So it's Bearcat Wright, WWA, Bobo Brazil, again, WWA. That was 3 years later.
Okay.
Sailor Art Thomas, again, WWA. Indianapolis. That was in 72. Ernie Ladd.
Big Cat.
WWA Indianapolis in 1980. Calypso Jim, WWA Indianapolis, 87.
Jesus.
Iceman King Parsons in 1988. That's WCCW. And then Ron Simmons.
Man, okay. What I learned today is that Indianapolis was way ahead of its time.
Yeah, say WWA sounded like they had their shit together, but of course we don't know any of the inside stories about that stuff, so it might have been an absolute nightmare.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the names, because I'm like, I absolutely know who Big Cat Ernie Ladd was. Maybe not the rest of them.
Bobo Brazil's a big name.
Yeah.
Oh, this is cool. Bearcat Wright defeated Freddie Blassie for the title.
Well, that's classy.
Nice.
That's okay, good. So that's just because I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to throw bad information out there, because I'm real bad about doing that sometimes.
I think,
and this is one of those important things we don't want to do that about.
Yeah,
but yeah, like Ron Simmons very much is like the general consensus of like the first like
mainstream world national company.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how to word it properly, because like you have the territories, and it sounds like there was one really fucking cool territory out there.
Well, it's when you start nitpicking the term world title. That's something that could have been and was reasonably defended in various areas around the world.
Yeah, so. Like when you say World Series of Baseball and it's only like American and Canada.
At this point, it's fine. Most of their players come from anywhere else.
That's true. So we got in anyway. So that's just, I mean, we spent 40 minutes on it. I think that's more than we expected. And that doesn't even scratch the surface of the rich history of black people in professional wrestling. We fully encourage everyone to read more about it, go out there and learn about these things. It's very fascinating and cool, but we do have to move on at some point and get through the news of the week. So are you guys good with that?
The only other thing that I want to request from people listening is that if there are names that you feel like we missed, especially on the independent level, You know, not talking about, you know, people signed to AEW, you know, like, you know, don't come out with Big Swole, but like independent people, wrestlers of color, black people.
Mike Anthony, he'll kill us if we don't say it.
Yeah, like throw those names to us, like or at least to me at least, because I'm always looking for more people to keep an eye on and people to follow. So
how did I forget Cheeseburger?
Oh, shit. Because again, there's a lot of names, and this wasn't just, you know, trying to hit the alphabetical list of.
Right. Yeah. No, we need a person for every letter of the alphabet. I'll start with Alfonso. Is it Kenny Alfonso? You know,
who's also just the nicest.
Very nice dude. Very nice dude. But
yeah, one more, really quick.
Okay.
Totally feel free to call out a racist prick in the crowd of a wrestling show.
Oh yeah,
like that's that's one. That
I know someone that did that.
Yeah,
it was me, and I was told to apologize to the guy, which I did not do. He actually apologized to me, and still, fuck that guy.
I think you told me that you like because it was during our promo against each other, and you threw it out there, which was super hard as a babyface to be like, yeah, the racist likes me, but but I remember you telling me like they want me to apologize, and I think my exact phrase was fuck that.
Yeah, no, I told Ken, I was like, I'm not gonna apologize to that guy, fuck that guy. I mean, he was literally, you know, now I'm not gonna say what he said, but it was blatantly racist.
Yeah, and, so like some wrestlers won't do it in the crowd or during matches and stuff like that. Shannon is very much an outlier, which is a good thing.
Thank you.
If you're a fan and you see that, don't stay silent, let them know they're a piece of shit. No, it's fine. Yeah,
and not just racism, homophobia, sexism, like anything that, you know, you can be a fan and you can criticize and yell things that you're right, you paid for your ticket, but there's a difference between like being part of the show and just being an outright bigot dick. And if you're being an outright bigot dick, you absolutely should be called out. So thank you, Dalton. Absolutely.
That's just one I needed to throw out there.
And speaking of, well, I don't know. I almost feel like we shouldn't talk about it, but I also feel like we kind of should with it's not on the list, I don't think, with the Forgotten Sons, Riker.
Yeah, I left that off.
Okay. I will not talk about it then. I think if people are listening, know what we're talking about. It's not a secret. I also want to just give a quick middle finger, double middle fingers actually, to Linda Hogan. What a piece of shit.
She's still using her ex-husband's fake name.
Oh my god. And I couldn't, when someone called her out on that, I was like, holy shit.
I still, Dalton, I feel like I need to clarify that when that came up, what I asked last night was not a joke. The second you posted that, I said, she's not dead? Yeah. I really thought she died somewhere along the way.
Oh, yeah. We can only wish.
And their son also quickly followed up with similar remarks. So that's a 2-for-1 special.
Oh, my God. No, I think it was Matt Fitchin of Besties in the World said, I can't believe Linda Hogan's still using her ex-husband's fake name. And I think I laughed for a solid 3 minutes.
It's the fake part that really makes the whole thing. It's one thing to still have the name. It's another to keep his ring name.
If it was Linda Balea, I would be like, oh, okay, cool. But it's Linda fucking Hogan.
What a joke that you hate the man so much and all that, and then you kept his name just for the attention. Like, Jesus Christ. Well, you got attention now.
All right, one more. Shannon, this one's for you. Well, wouldn't you want to be associated with the person that has the 10-inch penis?
Wouldn't you want to be associated in this climate with the person that was caught on tape using the N-word and came across as a gigantic racist? That's a good idea. Jesus Christ.
I mean, when you read what she said, probably.
Yeah, she does.
The only difference is Hulk Hogan apologized in public so he could keep making money. She hasn't done that yet.
Well, it's because she still has his money. The pre-Gawker money.
Oh my Hogan. God. God damn. Let's move on and put all that shit behind us. Let's talk about some news here, and let's start off with some unfortunate news. GCW, Asa, wrestler Danny Havoc passed away.
Yeah, it was super suddenly. As far as I know, the last I tried to look this afternoon, but I don't believe there has been any cause of death released yet. But he, young guy, just super like he was. I think he was only like 33 or 34.
I saw Moxley was pretty broken up about this. I think they faced each other a lot in CZW, not GCW.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. You know how I've told you guys don't just watch Dark Side of the Ring, watch the other things that Vice puts out.
Yeah,
they did it's over death matches, but I don't know if it's the one that has like Onita. But
I saw that.
They did one where Danny Havoc was like a very pivot, like he was a main part of the documentary. Because that's what Sadie said. That's how I found out about it. She was like, hey, the guy in the Vice documentary passed away. And then she said Danny Havoc. And I was like, holy shit. Because like if you were to tell me, like, I would assume Onita would go first because he did some serious mileage on his body. But yeah, no, it's a super bummer. He was like, not necessarily a pioneer in deathmatch because it was definitely going on before him, but he was like a very well-known deathmatch wrestler.
Mm-hmm. And given the reaction to so many people, like Eddie Kingston, you mentioned John Moxley, like so many people talked about how he was just the nicest, most positive guy, and you know, just it's super super sad. I can't remember who it was, but someone had posted that it looked like he had just recently lost his wife as well.
Mm.
So just it's a heartbreaking story, and of course we send our thoughts out to the all of his friends, family, and fans.
Absolutely, I know this goes without saying, but really getting tired of reporting these stories. In the past 3 weeks, we have not done a show in the past 3 weeks where we haven't had to report a wrestler's death.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just it's heartbreaking. Moving on to something a little bit more positive, British Strong Style sells 2,000 t-shirts in 24 hours with 100% of proceeds being donated to charity.
Yeah, this was they did a Black Lives Matter sale, essentially, where it was their old school. Was it the original British Strong Style shirt?
It was the OG one. And I'm so upset that I didn't realize that, because I told Sadie, I was like, I didn't even realize that was the first one. It was a reprint of their first shirt.
Mm-hmm. So they did a reprint of the shirt, and originally, like, Pete Dunne, I think, was the one that tweeted it out, or that might have been the one that I saw, but he tweeted out that they were doing these shirts as part of the Black Lives Matter movement. I don't know if they've said what charities it's actually going to be donated to, but originally he said it was going to be open for a few days. And then they hit 2,000 shirts sold, which is, I think he said $20,000.
Damn, 20,000 euros.
So they had to close it off to make sure that they could process everything. But that's outstanding to see.
Sidebar to that, Black Label Pro, which is a pretty prominent indie in the area, I think more so in Tennessee, but they're doing a Black Lives Matter shirt as well.
Aren't they out of Indiana?
Yeah. Sorry, I've been around Dwindle, and he talks a lot about Black Label Pro, so I just assume it's out of Mississippi. That's my fault.
Mm-hmm. Also, on a side note, and I don't want to mention it too much because I don't know the full story of it, I just want to ask you guys: did you hear about the controversy with Pro Wrestling Tees?
I saw it, no. And so basically, Ryan from Pro Wrestling Tees, he posted a picture of him boarding up his windows in Chicago. Which he said, like, the initial thing was it was very tone deaf. It was just like, cool, one day away from reopening Chicago and I have to do this. This sucks.
And also about their anniversary. Like, he was talking about the anniversary of Pro Wrestling Tees. And he did, to be fair, he did make a statement the next day apologizing for it and how tone deaf it was. But there are a lot of African-American wrestlers and stuff that are kind of calling for a boycott of it. But I don't know any more than that, so I didn't want to say too much. But that's literally all I know about it. But that could be a developing story. We'll see what happens. Everything's tense right now. It's a lot of people are saying dumb things and don't realize what they're saying. But anyway, we'll move on. Bushiroad, and that sounds weird to say it out loud. Bushiroad cuts executive. Take two. Cuts executive pay to prevent job losses.
Yeah, this is the parent company of New Japan Pro Wrestling and Stardom.
Gotcha.
So
that makes sense.
On the heels of, you know, WWE firing and furloughing however many people they did, Bushiroad executives are, which I think this might be this also might just be a cultural difference thing, because I know Nintendo has done this in the past.
Yes, Iwata, when I believe it was the Wii U came out and had such poor sales. Mm-hmm. He cut his salary to help cover the costs.
Yeah, and there's been other it was a Reddit thread that I saw where they were talking about it, and there was a few other companies that were based out of Japan that had done similar where they restructure the pay of the, you know, top of the food chain to distribute it down to make sure that people don't lose their jobs or have to suffer too greatly.
as opposed to WWE, where they cut a bunch of wrestlers just to save what turns out to be a pittance compared to what they're making.
Oh, and they're still like, even like they were, they're still on track to be more profitable than ever. So,
Samoa Joe reportedly a permanent replacement for Jerry Lawler. How do we feel about that? I mean, obviously the replacing Lawler is fine, but I think more of Samoa Joe being a announcer versus wrestler.
I was going to say I'm far more concerned about the idea that he might not be coming back to the ring.
Yeah. And it's not a done deal. Like, it's it has not been said that he has to retire. The door is apparently still wide open for him to, but in the meantime, he's clear. Apparently, he's still not clear, but it's once he is clear, it doesn't rule out that, you know, if he does get cleared, he won't be able to come back. But now this is, but for now, they want him on the commentary role.
And he's fantastic at it, to be fair. He's like, so he's good. Really good.
He's so good. I kind of like it. Really, I really wish that we could get, he would be on the commentary for Sunday for In Your House.
Oh, is there a wrestling pay-per-view Sunday?
Yeah, NXT In Your House.
Sweet.
Oh, yeah, that sounds cool. I did too. We've discussed it before. It's June, but it feels like it's 2023.
It's actually it's March 331st, if I remember correctly.
I hate this year. Speaking of letting people go and stuff like that, Nigel McGuinness furloughed. I read about that earlier today. Also, Chris DeJoseph was fired outright. He was one of the WWE writers. He's gone. But I was pretty upset about Nigel McGuinness being furloughed. I love Nigel McGuinness.
Yeah, and he, to me, like, I enjoyed him as a second to Morrow, but I liked Morrow so much, it kind of made me, I kind of wish Nigel had been, like, doing, if I had, I'd heard him doing stuff with, like, Michael Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he would be a great play-by-play guy for, like, the main roster. Because yeah. Morrow is so over the top and so bombastic, and I love him for it. I think he is one of the all-time greats at what he does. But Nigel, he always did a good job of like playing off of Morrow. But it would be interesting to see him play off of like a straight man, like a Michael Cole or Byron Saxton or Tom Phillips.
I'm sad because I never got to see him wrestle. By the time I was aware of who Nigel McGuinness was, he had already had his injury and had to retire.
Mm-hmm. YouTube,
so I never
buddy.
Got to see him wrestle.
You can go back and watch it anytime.
Hmm.
That was the one of the quotes of just like whenever Daniel Bryan was still in his forced retirement, of just it's such a bullshit timeline that Daniel Bryan and Nigel McGuinness are both signed to WWE and neither of them can wrestle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was legitimately the first time I ever saw both of those guys. It was for an ad. It was years ago. It was on PW Insider back when I used to go to there. And it was just an ad on the side that had them like next to each other. I don't know if they were wrestling or if they were just promoting whatever it was. But I remember seeing Daniel Bryan especially and thinking like, who is that guy? He looks like he's 14. He looks like a child.
And the crazy thing is he was being billed as the most dangerous man on the planet. And they were right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have had to have been for what, ROH?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a baby face though. My God. Mm-hmm. This one I feel is kind of past overdue to an extent. Turnbuckle Powerbomb's now on the WWE banned moves list. A lot of people are blaming both Seth Rollins' powerbomb on Sting and Nia Jax's powerbomb on Kairi Sane as a potential reason that they suddenly added this on there. In wrestling, of course, if you do a move correctly, there's usually no danger to it. But do you think the Turnbuckle Powerbomb is one of those moves that should be on the banned list, or do you think this is overreaching?
I think that it is a good move to ban versus like the pile driver, because the pile driver is a totally safe wrestling move that if the person is doing it, like, and this is any wrestling move, but when you have somebody that can do it so well, it can be used for a storyline because that pile driver it looks devastating. The turnbuckle powerbomb never put anybody away. And it's also super important that you're not bumping off of it. So, and like, just the way that like the way a wrestling move is supposed to happen is you're supposed to be able to lay down flat, or like it's gimmick to where you don't fall on your head. Whereas this one, the person throwing the move can't see where they're going. The person taking the move can only like kind of put their arms up and hope they get over the top rope. There's just so much room for error that like Seth Rollins does it perfectly. And even Seth Rollins has fucked people up. You said Sting, he also fucked up Finn Balor whenever he won the Universal title.
Yeah.
Real
I
quick
about that.
Worth pointing out that both of those instances, both Finn Balor and Sting have said that Seth Rollins did not mess that move up. It's Finn Balor takes the blame for his arm placement.
Yeah.
And Sting, his retirement came because he was they found the spinal stenosis. Yeah. So that was always going to be his last match. It was just that spot is where he lost the feeling, and that's where he started to kind of, you know, collapse.
Yeah. And yeah. I didn't, like, I'm not putting the blame on Seth Rollins. I'm just saying.
No. I'm just pointing out because there are a lot of people who still, you know, blame Seth Rollins. They never realized that. I think even Bret Hart walks back some of his criticisms.
Yeah. So, like, and it's a move that didn't put anybody away. That's kind of the, like, I listen to Jim Cornette, even though I vastly disagree with him on almost everything. But there are certain things that I like listening to him about, because he knows what he's talking about. When it's straight wrestling psychology, he's a really great person to listen to. And he was talking about the turnbuckle powerbomb. Like, it's impressive looking in the sense of it's not an old move. But you're throwing the person against the turnbuckle. They really can't see where they're going. The person throwing them can't see where they're going. And you're not, like, there's no big bump off of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no satisfying, like, boom on the mat.
Yeah.
They're just kind of hitting the turnbuckle and then selling out. You could do 30 different moves that have more safer setups, if that makes sense. Because I'm not going to lie. Like, if somebody said turnbuckle powerbomb, I would get freaked out. Because there's just, like, so much that could go. What happens if I slide out from under it and I hit the second turnbuckle instead of the top turnbuckle? Which kind of like there's a lot of things that could go wrong with that. Whereas if you just put me flat on my back,
I mean,
that's not going to happen.
That's how I feel when they say they're going to do any move to me. Is all I'd go through all of the things that could go wrong with that move. I remember when Osby said he was going to clothesline me. That's a simple move, and he said, you know, don't lower your head at all, or I'll break your nose.
Yeah, and I mean, cool. Of course, like,
cool.
Any wrestling move, and I mean, but
wrestling is stupid.
Like, there's so many moves like that. Like, I can get messed up or mess somebody up with almost any wrestling move.
Because you guys said, like, well, most wrestling moves are inherently safe, and I'm sitting here like, there's literally no such thing as a safe wrestling move.
Yeah, but, like, all right, so,
like, there are clearly safe ways to do all wrestling moves. But, yeah. Like, you know, look at, who was it? Goldust, like, almost had it have his, like, hand completely reattached because of a bulldog. Because he was giving someone a bulldog.
Or look,
totally
when
ruined his wrist.
When Kevin Nash almost ended his career stepping into the corner. That's it. He stepped into the corner.
That doesn't really help our argument. But yeah, no, Ace, I get what you're saying. But what I guess I mean is there are moves that are inherently safer than others, where the risk of there's not as many, like, potential injuries. A superplex is super safe. It looks devastating.
I remember you bitching about it too.
I don't like jumping off the top rope.
He said safe,
flat on my back.
Not unpainful, like.
Yeah, like, and also, it was, like, my third match ever, so suck it.
It was your first match.
No, I wrestled.
Oh, no, Stride.
I wrestled two times with Stride first.
It was your first CCW match.
Yeah, and, like, but that turnbuckle powerbomb, like, I could see how that could mess somebody up. If you're a little bit too tall or a little bit too low, short, that you could hit your head, and that is straight up, like, concussion. That thing is padded. But it's not padded enough to take a full fall to it. You can slam your head into it. You can eat the turnbuckle. Yeah. That's fine. But, like, when it's the back of your head getting thrown into it, ugh.
I feel like if you got to powerbomb somebody into something, if it's a completely flat surface, that's one thing. Like, the normal barricades they have around the ring, WWE anyway, since they have the fully padded ones and everything, or even now that they've got those plexiglass shields up, like, if you could do something into that, that would not cause it to break, obviously. That's one thing, because it's what you were talking about, that surface area. You still got a flat space for them to go up against.
But you're still throwing them.
Yeah, I was going to say, throwing them. It depends on how you're doing it. If you're just going to kind of ram them into it and then turn. To me, that looks better anyway. What the Authors of Pain were doing for a while, where they would, the tag team deal, where they
Super
would.
Collider.
Yeah, two guys against each other, then turn around and powerbomb them. That looks better anyway.
So it being flat, though, like, it's the whole thing. You see people, like, there was a good stretch like 5-6 years ago, where people were getting injured a lot by getting thrown into the barricade. And it's not because, like, it's the falling, like, you get thrown into the barricade and then you have to fall. And that's right. How you fuck your shoulders up. That's why, like, I saw that plexiglass, and I'm not going to lie, a part of me was like, oh, they could do some really cool fucking spots with that. But then I'm like, no, don't, because that's a new level of danger. It's like, there was a time where I was doing the segment on the show of, because this shit's not dangerous enough, that's one of those moments where it's like, no, don't do that, because you could actually get hurt.
I don't remember this segment.
No, that was the highest rated. No, that was the highest rated segment on the show.
It was whenever TNA was doing a lot of the, like, LAX versus OGs, and people that, like, a lot of people were getting really hard because they were like tearing the like getting down to the boards, and I'm like, yes, because this shit's not dangerous enough, let's take away the one thing.
Who was getting hard?
Indie fans, because that was a very big thing. Like, Gargano and Ciampa were doing it, I think. Yeah. Like, that was a very common thing 2 or 3 years ago, where they, like, everybody's like, we're taking the padding up, like, fuck that. Yeah.
And then Andrade, basically Andrade's finisher for like 6 months was just tear the padding up outside and DDT somebody on the concrete.
Yeah. And that looked, you know what, that's safe.
No, he only did that 3 times. It was over the course of 6 months because they whoever he did it to went away for 2 months because they were so injured.
Yeah, you're not. Well, because then they were Angel Garza, they brought him in, and then he started doing it. And I'm like, is that what Zelina adds at this point? Is that her managerial thing? All right, here's the deal. You're going to tear up the the padding outside. That's genius.
It's guaranteed to work.
Cena's going to come out, and they're just going to be like, oh, crap, it's not going to work.
Speaking of not working, let's move on and get this over with. There you go. Rob Gronkowski, Gronk, no longer working for WWE. He was released from his contract due to a clause, I think, in his contract that said if he went back to the NFL, they could let him go.
Which, if I did I read that incorrectly? I thought he exercised that clause, that he was the one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no. Okay. It wasn't WWE. No, he exercised that clause. Yeah. He lost the 24/7 title on Raw to
R-Truth. Who was playing the part of his gardener?
I think this is R-Truth's 900th run with the title at this point.
Yes. It feels like it.
He's got to be setting records all over the place over there. Finally, real quick, we mentioned it earlier, WWE NXT In Your House is coming up this Sunday. Asa, do you have the card for that? We can run over that real quick.
I do. Okay. We have Tommaso Ciampa versus Karrion Kross in a singles match.
Yes.
The triple threat match for the NXT Women's Championship. Charlotte Flair defends against Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai.
I hate Charlotte Flair.
They need to put it on. They need to put it on Io.
Yes.
I was trying to say Io, but I was reading Rhea Ripley's name.
Yeah, Io is something completely different in Japan.
They do. They do the fusion dance and then beat Charlotte Flair together, and then the belt breaks in half like when Laycool had it.
Yes.
And then it's just Io Ripley.
Yes.
Oh, why do I like that name so much? That works well.
Io Ripley. Yeah.
Finn Balor versus Damian Priest. It was revealed that Damian Priest was the one that laid out Balor before his number one contendership
the
match.
Archer of Infamy.
I just wanted to say that's a dumb name.
It is, yes.
I love the name Punishment Martinez.
So much.
Yes.
Like, that was just such a cool name. Well, Damian Priest is also it's that perfect level of try-hardy edgelord.
Yes.
Yeah,
that it really
perfect.
Is. Like, I'm pretty sure he's unlockable in one of the Devil May Cry games, right?
Yeah, he's a secret character.
Because he really won me over that Super Card of Honor that we went to WrestleMania weekend. It was just like, oh dang, this dude is actually, like, good.
Him
okay,
versus
cool.
Ishii. Ooh, it was so good.
Keith Lee defending the NXT North American Championship against Johnny Gargano, and then this is the one that Shannon will need to avoid, a backlot brawl for the NXT Championship as Adam Cole defends against Velveteen Dream, and if Adam Cole retains, Velveteen Dream can never challenge for the NXT Championship as long as Cole is still champion.
Why would I avoid that?
Because it's a cinematic match.
It's a backlot brawl.
But apparently it was filmed like one of the cinematic matches.
Yeah, because the last time they did that, that was live, right? When it was Piper and Goldust?
Part of it was live and some of it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, some of it wasn't in the sense that they reused footage of the O.J. Simpson chase.
No, they didn't do it all in one shot.
But they also used footage of the O.J. Simpson chase.
That is true, I wish that was a bit.
Yeah, I'm not joking.
I thought they just like reenacted it. Did they?
No, they straight up.
It was real.
Yeah, they straight up used the footage. Yeah.
Okay.
Let that sink in a little bit. All right.
Let that marinate.
Let that marinate, bud. That's the card for this Sunday in your house. I'm excited they're bringing the name back. That was always a terrible game.
There's a rumor they might be bringing back the set.
That would be pretty cool. The set was pretty cool, yeah. That's also going to wrap it up for us tonight. We're going to be back tomorrow with After Dark, which, like I said, we're going to be speaking more about the current climate, what's going on in America.
Classic After Dark.
Yeah, I both look forward to it and dread it because I tend to get a little mouthy on shows like that. We'll see what happens this time. And then, of course, Friday, the legendary group chat for Happiness Podcast. We got some fun things to counteract what we're going to talk about tomorrow, so that should be pretty cool.
Do we?
And then, of course, we'll do it all again next week. Well, we will. We got 2 days to figure
it out. Between now and then, something will happen.
Yeah, something will pop up, surely. Some good news we can talk about. And I'll do it all again next week. So, Asa, hit me with those links.
Podzilla 1980. My brain just completely, utterly shut down.
Okay, that works.
Yeah, everything's at Podzilla1985.com or at Podzilla1985.
And you can catch me on Twitter at, it's pretty much the only social media I use at this point, PZ85's Mr. 100. You can see all of my crazy liberal left-wing rants on there. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, Podzilla1985.com to catch up on the old episodes. I don't know if you mentioned that or not. I'm going to mention it again. All right, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, take care of yourselves. Hunter, take us out.
Later.